From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on July 18th in Miami, Florida, just before 5 p.m. That's when a 23-year-old man with autism walked out of the Mactown Panther Group Homes, a mental health facility. He was carrying a toy truck with him. 47-year-old Charles Kinsey went out to try to find him and bring him back. Someone called police and said that a man was threatening to shoot himself. When officers arrived, they said the man did not comply with their orders at that time. Now, Kinsey had arrived to try to help. And when he saw police, he laid down on the ground with his hands up in the air behind him. Cell phone video shows Kinsey on the ground with the autistic man sitting next to him. Kinsey called out to police, quote, "All he has is a toy truck. A toy truck. I'm a behavior therapist at a group home." Then Kinsey says to the man next to him in the video, "Please be still. Lay on your stomach." Now, despite this, an officer fired three rounds from his rifle. One of the bullets struck Kinsey in the leg. Police then turned him on his back and cuffed him. Why did police shoot? Well, several days later, the head of the local police union explained that the officer who fired the bullets was aiming for Kinsey's patient, the man with autism, and was, quote, "trying to save Kinsey's life," end quote. That sparked new questions. And here at WXXI, we received a wave of messages from parents of children with autism. They told me that this has been their biggest fear, that first responders, sometimes teachers or police, will not understand how to interact with someone who has autism. So this hour, what can we learn from what happened in North Miami? How can our community improve in how we interact with everyone and do it more safely? My guests include, and I'll go around the table first, Chief Michael Simonelli from the Rochester Police Department. Chief, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also here is Sergeant Steve Boyle from the Rochester Police Department. He's the head of the Emotionally Disturbed Persons Response Team. Sergeant, thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Also here in studio is Dave Whalen. He's the Director of First Responder Disability Awareness Training at Niagara University. Dave, welcome to you.
Thanks so much.
And Deputy Brian McCoy is here from the Monroe County Sheriff's Department. He leads disability awareness training for recruits. And Deputy, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
On the phone with us is Rachel Rosner, Director of Education and Support Services for Autism Up. Rachel, thanks for taking the time as well.
Thanks for having me.
I want to start with just, I want to kind of get this incident out of the way. We're not going to dwell on what happened in North Miami for the entire hour, but I will say, there, I can't think of a single incident that sparked more feedback directly to me, and this didn't happen here, but parents of children with autism were just beseeching us, please talk about this. This is what we fear. And you know, if you listen to what Charles Kinsey said, he's the caregiver in this case. He was interviewed in his hospital bed after that shooting. He survived the shooting. But here is what Kinsey had to say about what went down on that day. Let's listen.
I'm going to the ground just like this here with my hands up. And I'm laying down here just like this. And I'm telling him again, sir, it's no need for a firearm. I'm unarmed. He's an autistic guy. He had a toy truck in his hand. When he shot me, it was so surprising. It was like a mosquito bite. And when he hit me, I'm like, I still got my hands in the air. I said, no, I just got shot. And I'm standing there, I'm like, sir, why did you shoot me? And his words to me, he said, I don't know. So I was really more worried about him than myself, because I'm looking at, as long as I got my hands up, they're not gonna shoot me. This is what I'm thinking. They're not gonna shoot me. Wow, was I wrong? Every time I close my eyes, you know, it's just like, I'm just seeing flashbacks.
All right, that's Charles Kinsey, the caregiver in this case, and Rachel Rosner, Director of Education and Support Services for Autism Up. What went through your mind when you saw this story?
Even just listening to the interview now with Mr. Kinsey, it just literally makes my heart ache. This is the worst nightmare for parents of a child with autism or any disability. Autism in particular, because social skills and communication, language are impaired, and we are sending our kids off into the community. This is something that I fear every day. My son is an 18-year-old young man with autism and wants nothing more than to live away from us and do things independently on his own. And as if it doesn't terrify me enough on a moment-to-moment basis to let him go to the grocery store or take a walk or go to CVS, because I know that he misunderstands what other people are saying and that people have a difficult time interpreting what he's trying to communicate, add this on top of it, and it's just a complete and total nightmare. It's the reason why the work that I do, along with the RPD and the sheriff's office and Dave Whalen, is so, so important. We want every first responder in the entire country to be trained on how to work with people with autism.
Rachel, I referred in the introduction to this program to some of the comments made by the head of the police union there, that the officer who did fire the shots was actually trying to hit the man who has autism, not the man who had his hands up lying on his back. And that surprised a lot of people. But at the same time, I'm not going to defend what I saw, but I do also want to point out that from what I understand, police were told that a man had a gun and was threatening to kill himself. So I guess part of it may have been bad communication. In your experience, or at least the way you see this incident, do you feel at all any differently hearing that officers were told, well, the man has a gun, well, he's threatening to shoot himself?
No, I don't. Because from what we saw in the video, from what we heard from Charles Kinsey, that wasn't the case. I don't mean to place blame and don't intend to place blame on police in general. It's so important that we work together with law enforcement officers, but the fact remains that this particular officer in this particular incident didn't understand what was happening. He was doing his job and relying on the training that he receives. And the fact that people with autism are so misunderstood, It just made the problem so much worse. Ronaldo Rios, which is the name of the adult with autism who the police officer was actually aiming for, Mr. Rios was doing the best that he could do. And Mr. Kinsey was helping him do that. The fact is that Mr. Rios was unable to comply with the officer's command. He was doing the best that he could, but he wasn't able to do what the officer asked him to do. Mr. Kinsey was trying to interpret and to reassure the officer that Mr. Rios was calm and not dangerous. Relying on the training that the officer did have, the signals got crossed. And for me, you know, signals get crossed between me and my son on a daily basis. I don't understand what he's trying to express. And sometimes what I say, he isn't able to understand it in the way that I would hope that he would. And he's my son. The idea that this can happen and does happen out in our community is just devastating.
And Rachel, by the way, this is sort of a side note, but and may seem like semantics to people, but I do want to ask, only because every time autism is a subject on the program, I do hear from listeners who may be bothered one way or another. Sometimes we use the term person with autism. Sometimes we use the term autistic man. And I've heard from listeners and parents who prefer one or the other, and it's not sort of a uniform thing. I would just ask semantically what I should be using, what term I should be using, only because I don't want to offend.
Mm-hmm. I think the easiest thing to do is to use what's called person first language, where you refer to a person with autism, a man with autism.
Okay.
There are plenty of people who are comfortable using the word autistic to describe someone, including many self-advocates, people themselves who have autism. I always err on the side of caution. Use person-first language. We use that at Autism Up. But if there is a family or a person with autism that would prefer to be referred to as an autistic person, and I do know some of them, then I take my cues from them.
Sure.
And use it that way. But the, I guess, politically correct, most inclusive, least offensive way of doing it is to refer to a person with autism, and then I take my cues from them.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you for that. Chief Simonelli, just your thoughts on when you saw this incident. And I also recall other conversations with you about other incidents in which sometimes it's wiser to not comment until you get as much information as possible. Do you feel like you have enough information that you can evaluate what you saw in this video?
Well, I don't think I can completely evaluate it as I would had this happened in the Rochester Police Department and have a responsibility to review it. From what I've seen of the video, the media reports that I've read, and I really have access to no further information than the general public does now, I would have to say this is inexplicable to me. Frankly, Rachel's explanation that we just heard was probably the most insightful analysis that I've heard to try to explain it. You know, there is a lot that I would want to know. Clearly, Mr. Kinsey was acting in a responsible manner and trying to de-escalate the situation. We don't know how much the officer heard or understood of that. We don't know all the information. So I really would have to reserve judgment on a personal level until I had more information.
Sergeant Boiley, you're the head of the Emotionally Disturbed Persons Response Team. I don't want to necessarily plant a hypothetical because it didn't happen here. I don't know that an event like that would happen here. But can you at least try to envision how you would react if this was your department or someone who you had trained? I mean, are you surprised this happened at all? I guess I'll start with that.
Yes. Not knowing the officer's mindset, I can't really give an opinion of what he was thinking, what he saw.
Sure.
What we try to train our officers is take your time. There's always time. And it doesn't seem like that occurred in this situation. But as the chief said, I only know what I've read in the papers. I have no explanation for
Sergeant,
it.
They may think they didn't have time. I mean, I don't know. It's very hard to get in someone's head like that.
And that is the problem. Without knowing what he was going through in his head, it's impossible to say. It looks bad. There's no other way of saying it. I think the officers in the Rochester Police Department and the agencies around here, generally in New York State, are very well trained. I think we respond fairly well, but we're also human, as was that officer, and he made what appears to be a really bad choice. But you know, there's no way of giving a 100% answer.
Yeah. Deputy McCoy, your thoughts?
Just to build on the first thing with what Rachel said, is if he did rely on the training he had, then maybe we review that as approach, reviewing the situation and helping the outcome with the person with autism. And then, again, what the sergeant said, one of the biggest things we're trained is take your time, right? What do you have? What do you need? What resources? Do you need additional resources? And to evaluate it from there.
Okay. And Dave Whalen, what do you think?
50 to 80% of a police officer's day is encountering a person with a disability. That's the Bureau of Justice statistics. We are prone to every situation, every encounter being a risk or a challenge for an officer if they're not educated in understanding disabilities across the spectrum. You know, we don't just train on autism in our program. We train on all disabilities because everyone can pose a unique challenge to a police officer. So we have concerns. The response was clearly inappropriate, and it showed that he had no training or a complete lack of understanding of if he received any training at all. You know, what we are doing in the state of New York is the Division of Criminal Justice Services, DCJS, has embraced the program we've developed to now build it in the recruit training course. So every officer, every new recruit, every new officer will have complete training in disabilities. And our program is offered across the state for veteran officers so that they can take it as well. So we have concerns. We have a way to remedy it. It's up to the police departments themselves to get a trainer in the program and then go out and conduct the training within their departments. Not all of them have done that. We have 110 departments in the state of New York that have received the training. Most of them have not conducted it within their departments, according to our record. So we have a way to go, but we are way ahead of the curve in New York State. I will say that and support some of the officers' comments earlier.
All right, listeners, if you want to call the program and weigh in, it's 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We are going to proceed this hour with a conversation about first response to working with people with autism, to working with people in this community, and to the way parents are hoping that police and first responders are trained. And we are also going to proceed with a kind of trust that the explanation given by the police union in North Miami was fair and representative. In other words, I want to address an elephant in the room. I've heard from a number of listeners already saying this was never about autism, that was a scapegoat, that it was an African-American caregiver. He got shot. Now, 2 days later, they came out and said, well, they weren't trying to shoot the black man. They were trying to shoot the man with autism. And listen, I'm just not going to kind of get into that. I'm going to take at their word they were actually trying to shoot a man with autism. And Rachel, I mean, I guess we could get bogged on the side on were they actually trying to shoot the man with autism, but I have to take them at their word, and I think it sounds like you do as well in this case. Do you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I think that in my mind, in my heart, it doesn't matter whether he was trying to shoot a black man or a man with autism. He was scared of what he doesn't understand. In this case, he didn't understand what was happening with an adult with autism sitting in the middle of the road doing the best that he could. Most people wouldn't. And I absolutely understand that. As the parent of two children with autism who are both incredibly different from each other, every person with autism that I've met is different from the next, just like every person in the world is different. Autism manifests itself differently in each individual. So every contact that you would have had with an individual with autism is different. Knowing that you might not understand, accepting that just as a person, let alone a police officer who's coming into contact with people with disabilities on a daily basis, as Dave said, over 50% of their interactions. Being able to take that time, take your time, take a breath, and think, while you, as an officer, may be in danger, is so incredibly complicated. But the fact remains that this officer was shooting at a man with autism because he didn't understand he was doing, why he couldn't comply. And that is where the training is so, so, so important, so that an officer can have more experience learning to interpret and being able to think a little bit outside the box with people with disabilities so that they can make better, stronger, safer decisions for everyone, including the officer themselves.
So let me turn.
I would never want to discount the fact that a police officer's first responsibility is to make sure that everyone is safe, including themselves. I think that's really important to remember.
Sure, and that's why I want to turn back to Sergeant Steve Boiley and then bring in the rest of the panel on training then. How do we train? What goes on now? Sergeant, I think everyone assumes that if an officer feels that there is an immediate threat, then maybe the circumstances are different. So assuming that's the case, let's set aside a case where an officer responds to a scene and their assessment is that someone may be acting erratically or have an emotional disturbance, et cetera, but they don't feel like there is an immediate lethal threat to them. Take me through what the training involves. You know, every case is different. Every scenario is different. There's no perfect answer to this. But tell me a little bit about training, and I'll ask all of our panel to weigh in on this as well.
Well, we have two different kinds of training. One is academy-based, and that's what every police officer in Monroe County goes through. Standardized, so an officer in Brighton gets the same training as an officer in the city. And that's fairly basic, 16 hours to deal with mental health issues, plus 4 hours that Deputy McCoy teaches for the developmental disabilities. So we have that, plus field training to prepare a rookie officer to be out on the road. In addition to that, the Rochester Police Department has a specialized unit, the EDPRT team, that goes through a week-long training that's far more specific. It will cover the specific mental illnesses, so it will go into, for example, bipolar disorder, what the symptoms are, how a person exhibits, things like that. It will cover the medications they might be taking. We also cover more developmental disabilities in that class. We bring in, we call them consumers, people from the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, to talk to us about their interactions with the police. We role play situations with people from NAMI to give the officers kind of real world experience. So we do that 40 hours, and then two or three times a year we pull the 98 members of our department that are trained off the road for an eight-hour training day, where we do follow-up training on any number of subjects. Right now we're planning with Rachel to have Autism Up come in and do some training. We had actually started planning that prior to the incident in Florida. But things like that to give us a core of officers who have more specialized training to deal with these type of situations.
Sergeant, do you sense in the span of your career, and I don't know how long you've been in law enforcement, but do you sense that there is more priority now than ever before on working with people with autism, et cetera? Have you seen that? Because my guess is there are plenty of incidents every single year, maybe every day, with someone with autism in a community or someone with other conditions. This isn't the kind of training that's hypothetical and you may never have to use it, in other words, right?
Oh, I agree. If you're in law enforcement, given the increase in the numbers in people with autism and other disorders or disabilities, you're going to run into it, and you have to be trained, and you have to more or less have the patience to be able to address it appropriately.
Okay. Deputy, I want to bring in Deputy and McCoy and Dave Whalen. Deputy McCoy, I'll start with you. This morning, in the lead up to this program, I heard from a parent of a child who lives in a group home, and there was an incident in which the parent felt that there was aggressive restraint. I know, and Rachel can probably weigh in on that, I know this is a sensitive subject in this community. How do you train officers to know where the line is when they must be physical and how to avoid getting physical when we have seen so many confrontations turn physical, you know, sort of by their nature over the years? How do you work with officers on that?
That's a loaded question. the first thing I can add is they would need to speak to their defensive tactics training.
Okay.
As far as restraints and force and things like that. What I can speak to about the awareness training that we put on is to keep in mind that people with autism may have poorly developed upper trunk muscles. Physical restraint may cause positional asphyxia, and we got to make sure that we're monitoring that. Mm-hmm. That is taught in our awareness block. Rachel also comes in and speaks during the autism block, and she can maybe comment more on that. But as to restraining someone with autism, that is definitely spoken about, and that training comes from David and with Rachel and myself.
Okay. Rachel, you want to weigh in on that before I kick it back over to Dave Whalen? Just thoughts on training when it comes to restraint, use of force, that kind of thing?
Sure. You know, obviously I'm not a police officer.
Sure.
So I haven't been trained in those things. But the main point that I try to get across, imagine being a police officer getting called to a scene, just like what happened in North Miami. There's a man with a gun. The police officer, your training kicks in, as it should, but your life could be in danger. So that police officer is in fight or flight mode. On top of having their training kick in, their heart is beating, maybe their blood pressure is raised. They're going into a sensitive, complicated situation. Where there's Mr. Rios, who was sitting in the middle of the road, or any person with autism, live in a state of fight or flight mode within their bodies, just walking around every day. The world is completely overwhelming. Knowing that my son is walking around when he looks outwardly calm and appears outwardly calm, that his autonomic nervous system is in fight or flight mode every minute of the day, when you put those two things together in an incident like that, it is the extra training that was being talked about to really truly understand what a person with autism is like, where they're coming from, how they might respond, what it might look like, how it might appear to be something different than it is. that's where the nuances come into play. That's where mistakes get made, and that's why training is so incredibly important. When this poor man, Mr. Rios, was having an incredibly difficult time, he ran away from his residence. He needed to get out of there. He physically, psychologically, emotionally, whatever you want to call it, he couldn't stay. He needed to stay. So Mr. Kinsey was trying to help him to get back there. Knowing how to negotiate that with any person on the street for a police officer is incredibly complicated. When you add to that that a person has autism or another developmental disability, it is even more critical to have the detailed, in-depth kind of training that Dave and his group are providing and that I've been working with the RPD and the Sheriff's Office in Monroe County to try and provide that extra support and information for officers.
Dave Whalen's the Director of First Responder Disability Awareness Training at Niagara University. You want to weigh in on that too?
Sure, and the initial topic here is that officer safety first. That's the first page in our training manual, safety first. We are not here to supplement the 800 hours that they get in the recruit course in the academy on top of everything else that officers get. The training they get is extremely extensive, and people need to understand that in the community. So this is just one area. We would take the position that this should be a top five on their training based on the statistics and the variety of disabilities. Again, each disability poses a unique challenge. And within each disability, there are unique challenges. We have a video on how to understand cerebral palsy, dispelling the myths. People will have in their mind a disability is this, and it really isn't that. What we are really pushing the officers, and some of these words have already been said, awareness we've heard a couple times, obviously, understanding, and I can't downplay enough the ability to understand the disability and what you may be encountering. Recognition. If anything that we feel we provide, it's the ability to recognize a disability and then properly and appropriately respond to that disability, whatever that disability may be, so that I am doing the right thing. You know, we also have things like the Americans with Disabilities Act that govern many aspects of law enforcement that put officers in another spot. So, you know, not to go down different roads on today's topic, but there's a whole bunch of avenues here and needs that need to be understood and addressed. And I will say this about Rochester. Now, we study this across the country. We're in Missouri. We're in Arkansas. We're about to be in Montana, New Jersey, and Oklahoma. We've worked with the federal government. What we're doing in Monroe County, what you're doing in Monroe County, my colleagues around the table and Rachel and at Autism Up, is ahead of the curve. This is not happening in other counties, so there's been a proper response. We should also note that the Rochester Police Department, their response to the deaf community, because such a high level of high presence of deaf citizens, is also progressive. So there's ways to go about this. It's essential to ensure that I have at least a base understanding, and then just to, you know, my last piece on this topic, it's got to have some staying power. What kind of information is left? If you look to my left here, Deputy McCoy has a resource manual that officers can continue to access. Our website has information right now that officers can learn who've never even gone through the course, how to respond to people with certain disabilities and such. So let's not just focus on a training. You know, it's nice that we go into a department, we train, we have someone, an autism expert, coming to town next week and train. He's in town, he's out of town. What are we doing to base that and have some staying power for information and education for officers?
Deputy McCoy, go ahead.
One thing to add, we're talking about the response, right, response to a call. There's one layer in between here that we have a phenomenal opportunity to work with is our emergency communications. We have great call takers. We have phenomenal dispatchers. We have a state-of-the-art facility there. And to add to that, we have the SPIN program. And for anyone not familiar, it's a special persons in need. In summary, the parent or caretaker of the person, the person with autism, calls and gives pertinent information, name, date of birth, and maybe where they're last seen. It could be as specific as what toy they like to carry with them or what they like to go and do when they're in a heightened state. We on the road, when we get this, it's called a job card, almost immediately get this information, contact numbers left, things like that. As we're en route to a call, we have a whole lot of information and numbers to call and people to speak with that helps us with our approach. So as we're talking about responses and training, there is that layer here that we have in the Rochester area, Monroe County, that we use.
Again, this is not at all to absolve anything that happened in North Miami or anywhere else, but you see how important that chain of communication is, because you want, Chief Simonelli, you want your officers, whatever the call, whatever the scenario, to have the best information possible, don't you?
Sure, that's correct. And, you know, the training evolves over time, and but I think, you know, I did not know the statistic that Dave cited, but it's certainly consistent with my experience about the number of people that we deal with. And, you know, it's very helpful. For example, I know many, many years ago when I went through the academy, one of the things we were taught that in, you know, some situations, you know, a certain type of touch to someone may help diffuse a situation. And we know that in other situations now, as we've gotten more sophisticated with more information, that may not be the right thing to do. So, you know, the more information we have going in is better. The other point is, we have over 700 officers, almost 100 are trained in EDPRT. We're constantly trying to add that additional level of training. If we have information in advance, we can try to find an available, even if that's not the officer whose beat the call is in, we can get an officer from somewhere else in the city to respond, or even we'll go to the county or to another department if we need to, because we all help each other. So the more information we have to tailor the best response is always going to work out better.
Fred in Greece, we're going to be coming to you in just a second after our only break of the hour. Others, if you want to call the program with questions or comments on your experiences, you can do that. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. The shooting of a caregiver, a man working with someone with autism in Florida, is what sparked this conversation. I think Dave Whalen making the point that what's happening in Monroe County is maybe not happening across the country. I don't know, Dave, if you know in North Miami if they had training in this kind of way. Do you know offhand?
I do not. We reach every incident that gets to our desk across the country. We do follow up with and try to talk to the departments. We have not talked to them
Sure.
yet. We will be, though.
Okay. So we don't know what kind of training happened there, but it shouldn't be assumed that that kind of incident, or at least if there was a lack of training, that that's the case everywhere. And that's what we're learning here. So let's get our only break. We're going to come back and grab a phone call from Fred in Greece and others if you want to jump in as well as we continue our discussion here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, presidential candidate Gary Johnson is a libertarian, and The New Yorker says at an event, he said he didn't know who Harriet Tubman was, and polls show he's not alone. Why do so few Americans seem to know her story? We'll explore it. Then second hour, movie ratings. Why is it PG-13 for gun violence and an R rating for smoking marijuana? The discrepancies in ratings. Talk with you Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. When that shooting happened in North Miami, Florida last month, parents of kids with autism around the country, parents of adults with autism, said that that is exactly what they worry about, that a first responder will not be trained properly, and there may be violence or that kind of an incident that maybe isn't necessary or is an inappropriate response. And so we've invited people in our community to come in and talk about the training that does go on and what we all can learn from it. Chief Michael Simonelli from the RPD is here, along with Sergeant Steve Boyle, who's the head of the Emotionally Disturbed Persons Response Team for RPD, Deputy Brian McCoy from the Monroe County Sheriff's Department, who leads disability awareness training for recruits, Dave Whalen, the director of First Responder Disability Awareness Training at Niagara University, and on the phone with us is Rachel Rosner, who's the director of Education and Support Services for Autism Up. On the phone's first phone call is in Greece. This is Fred. Go ahead, Fred.
How you doing? No, I just had a couple questions. I have a daughter with autism. She now resides at Hillside because of some of her uncontrollable behaviors and some other mental health issues. And we've had problems in Greece with her where the police were called, and Greece police have been great, understanding, speaking with us, trying to do the appropriate thing every time something happens. We've had quite a different response from RPD at Hillside. She gets in these fight or flight things that Rachel was talking about and perseverates about pulling the fire alarm and pulls the fire alarm and has done it multiple times. So I kept asking Hillside, you know, when the police come out, don't you talk to them and explain to them? They say, the police just shoves us aside, takes control, throws her in the car, takes her downtown, books her, throws her in jail. She's been in jail probably, I don't know, over 2 weeks, you know, total. You know, I've paid bail money. It's been a constant disruption in her treatment. She's went through withdrawal symptoms in jail before we bailed her out for not getting her medication. And I called the jail, and they said that the police officers didn't fill out the proper paperwork for them to have the proper information. It's just been a constant struggle. So now we're left with her facing multiple felonies. Like I said, and, you know, like we missed a, she missed an appointment with her psychologist today so we could take her to a pretrial release program. And it didn't seem like those officers were trained very well. And they kind of knew what they were rolling up on. They were going to Hillside and just want a response from the chief.
Fred, thanks for the phone call. Here. Chief Simonelli, go ahead.
Fred, thanks for the call. You know, first of all, I'm going to say I'm not personally familiar with that situation. I'm going to ask you to write down my office number. I would like to talk to you and get some more details. My number is 428-7033. That's 428-7033. And if we get some more information on your specific case that you've talked about, we'll certainly look into it. Based on what you're saying, I will review the responses we're doing to Hillside and make sure that they live up to the standards that we should be meeting.
Fred?
Yes.
You got the number?
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you for the call. And I mean, I think what he's describing, Dave Whalen, is just sort of a disparity that he sees. I mean, every person's different. Every police officer's different. But any sort of general response to what you heard from Fred?
Yeah. What we teach is outreach. You know, let's network. Let's have the police department and fire department understand my son or daughter, or if I'm the person myself, my disposition and challenges in advance. So we want a two-way street there relative to connectivity with the local first responders, be it fire or law enforcement, depending on the person's needs. I think the other thing that I want to just caution about, and I hear, you know, Dennis DeBose coming to town. I've seen Dennis's show here. It's very good, but there'll be about 80 officers there, 40 officers there. Well, what is that? That's going to be three or four or five officers from RPD or 10 and five from Greece and so on and so forth. We want to be sure an entire department is trained and blanket that department and provide the ability for everyone to receive the training. So those are good, but we don't want the in and out training. And I think that's where I have a concern when you have such big police departments like Rochester and Buffalo. Buffalo's going to be doing our program. It's going to take them a year to do it. They admit that. I get that with the large departments, but you have the ability to own it and do it on your training schedule, which is something we just want to be sure everyone embraces.
Sergeant, anything to add to that point he's making there?
2 points just to maybe clarify a little bit. I do know, can't speak to this specific instance, but in the group homes that are used by mental health providers in the city of Rochester, anytime a fire alarm is pulled, the RPD and RFD fire investigators automatically press charges. That is part of their policy. That's nothing that I control. And the other issues with the medication, that is something that Fred should take up with the jail, possibly a supervisor, because RPD has no control over medications dispensed in the jail. I do know it can take them a day or two to get the medications, but he definitely should follow up with that just to ensure that his daughter is taken care of the way she should be.
Okay. I'm going to get back to your phone calls, and Al in Rochester is next. This is Al. Go ahead, Al.
Yes. Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I was calling. I thought that it's interesting because of the I was calling about the fear factor. Okay. The Rachel, if I'm not mistaken, suggested that the officers are running in fight flight mode pretty regularly. And the question is, with the you spend a lot of time talking about training. Training is great, but if there's an inherent fear on the part of the officer, or the officers. Just due to whatever situation, the person with some mental issue, ethnic issues, whatever it happens to be, a lot of times that fear kicks in before the training. And how is that filtered out? How do you understand the officer's psychological aspects, whether they've been trained or not? I'm not a roofer because I've got an inherent fear of heights. I
sure
know that
sure.
I can be trained all day on how to fall. I don't want to fall. The same thing could be applied to, I don't want to deal with this particular grouping of people, but this is my job. And I'm asking because it's one of those questions that never really gets addressed in the whole scheme of things, no matter how that happens to be.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Al, thank you. Very interesting point. Thanks for the phone call. I'm going to start with Chief Simonelli, and we'll kind of go around the table or however you want to direct it. But Chief Sim, you want to
start? Sure. Al, that's really a great question. And, you know, for us, we start with our selection process. We try to have a very intensive selection process, an intensive background investigation, a psychological review. We do a polygraph as part of our background investigation. It's not a perfect process by any means, but we do try to, at that level, weed out people we don't think would be suitable. Then the training is absolutely critical. People, officers are people. They're placed in situations in which a rational person will feel fear. But we treat people, we train people to learn how to control that, and through repetition and through constantly looking for better and more effective ways to train, we have to recognize that the human element in our officers and try to control it. And then also we review incidents, and when we find the officers did not or could have done a better job, or whether we could have provided a better training, or whether we have to look at a different policy or approach, we're very, very open to improving. But that's a great question.
Okay. Others want to weigh in on dealing with fear, to Al's point there? Rachel? Yeah, go ahead, Rachel Rastner. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think that Al raises a very valid point about our society in general. But that specific thing is the reason why I'm out there on behalf of Autism Up, trying to develop these relationships between people and agencies in the community. I think that those relationships, those one-on-one opportunities for people to get to know each other and understand and learn about each other are the basis with which officers and other people in the community are going to then go and interact with each other on a daily basis. So it's why I'm out there introducing myself. It's why you have and should have, if you are the parent of a person with a disability, call your local police department. Go in for a visit. Come to a community event. We're having a family event, Kite Flight, on August 20th. The Sheriff's Department will be there. You know, any of those opportunities to meet, to understand, to learn from each other in a situation where it's not fraught with danger, where there's no incident, can only help to be able to avoid those situations in the future. If you are the parent of a child with a disability and your child is not registered with the SPIN system, you should do that. All important information to have, so that hopefully these incidents don't happen in the future.
I would say the single most common question we're getting, and we're getting a lot of feedback online, on social media and email, is I think people are first of all, glad to hear that there is a lot of training that's happening that we're hearing from our various guests on this panel today, especially more training than there was many years ago, certainly. But the question is, what is that training? And I want to hit this from a couple different ways, and I want to start with a question that came in offline. Actually, this is from Alex on Twitter. Does any of this training involve actual interactions with real people with autism? To recognize autism, one must interact with people with autism. That's a good question. I'll start there. And then, so let's start with that specific point from Alex, and then we'll talk about what the training involves. Deputy McCoy, you want to start?
To that question, we don't have, in the past couple classes, someone with autism come in. We have videos that David has given us with interactions with persons with autism, and Rachel comes and speaks on behalf with her son. I'm going to let her speak to the exact reason as to why we don't bring someone into the class, okay. But we bring in parents, caretakers, or again, sorry for the repeat, the video of someone with autism in specific cases and scenarios.
Okay. Dave Whalen as well, and then I'll go to Rachel Rastner, but go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, that is the best way to train anyone. Everyone needs disability awareness training. It's not just first responders. The best way to train is to have interaction. The challenge with training any first responder department, especially law enforcement, is timing. They have so much training that they go through. This is not the only topic they train on. Everyone's aware of that. We have other major topics that grab headlines. So our intent with our training is that they will be trained on the topic, and we build in the videos to do the teaching, which is people with those disabilities talking to first responders. Ideally, and what we also build in is what we call a training network. You want to do a particular section, and you want to bring someone who is blind in, someone with autism in, et cetera, et cetera. We encourage that, and we will connect those police departments, fire departments, EMS departments across the state with those entities. So ideally, the question is, and absolutely sure, it would be best that way. But from a timing standpoint, it's almost impossible, especially with all the disabilities out there.
Rachel Rosner?
I think that Alex brings up an incredibly important point, that the best people to speak for and advocate for people with disabilities are the people with disabilities themselves. Through developing the trainings that I have developed at Autism Up, I try as often as I can to pass them by and discuss them with self-advocates, adults with autism, to get their point of view, to get their feedback, to get their buy-in that we are headed in the right direction, delivering the right messages. I would love to co-train with an adult with autism. My only word of caution, and I hope this doesn't come out the wrong way, is that, again, when you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Well, yeah.
If there is a self-advocate that is able and willing to come with me to do this training for the Sheriff's Department, or RPD, or any organization that would have that, I would welcome that opportunity. What I don't want to happen is for the people that the officers that we train, the first responders that we train, to come away from that thinking that that's what every person with autism is going to be like when you interact with them.
Dave and Deputy McCoy jumped right up and said, you know, they said that exactly. I mean, there's a danger in generalizing, saying people with autism in this monolithic category, which is obviously the wrong way to tell that story, Dave.
And what we're trying to avoid is just what Rachel said. We don't want to show, I don't have a lot of videos on autism for that reason. I have people talking about autism. I have to have some people with autism, but we don't want to sit there and then say, okay, that's autism.
But there's some commonalities, right?
And that's what we teach. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. What are the characteristics of every disability? What are the characteristics I may encounter? And then I have that down. I understand those characteristics across the broad spectrum. And maybe that the person's not training me, but Rachel brought it up earlier, those community events and the ability to community police and to connect with the autism day programs and the DD service providers locally. I'm in the town of Amherst, and the chief of police, every year I run a baseball league for players with disabilities. Every year the chief comes with about 20, 30 officers, and they volunteer and play ball all day. It's not just a cutesy nice thing. There's exposure and awareness training that's happening right then and there.
All right, on Twitter, Matt writes to us and says, a quick Google search for police and autism yields many articles about how departments train officers for scenarios. The articles tend to focus on children with autism, but not adults. Police seem to be training for child interaction, but not adults with autism. I don't think that's what we're getting this hour, but Matt's concerned that a lot of the training he's seeing focuses on kids, not adults. No? You were shaking your head, Dave. No?
Well, no, I mean, that is true, but the autism, and Rachel will speak more to this, you know, autism is still growing. I mean, our children with autism are becoming adults, so it is becoming more of an adult issue. But no, in our program, and I'm sure in her program, you're training about autism specifically to recognize it, especially people, and go back to you're talking about recognitions, people with higher functioning autism who might even pose greater challenges because there is minimal identification there, but they still would have challenges with an encounter with an officer, routine being broken, and a 911 call is routine being broken.
Okay. Others want to weigh in on that?
I think
go ahead, Rachel.
They've really hit the nail on the head here. Every child with a diagnosis of autism is going to grow up to be an adult with autism. And knowing that, the direction in which our country is going and our state is going, which is the right direction, that people with autism and disabilities should be out living in the community. Group homes are no longer being built and supported by the state. That people with disabilities are going to be more than they are already. Your neighbors, your coworkers, your friends, the person who waits in line behind you at the coffee shop, and knowing that people with autism are going to be living out in the community independently, that makes this training not just awareness that it's out there, but really training and understanding even more important. They're not going to be, you know, responding to a call at a group home. They're going to be responding to a call at an apartment complex or in a neighborhood. So those initial red flags that might come up when you know you're going to a group home aren't going to be there. So I think that knowing that these people with autism are going to be adults living, hopefully fulfilling active lives in our community makes this even more important.
And we're down to about roughly our last minute. Sergeant Boyle, some final thoughts from you as well on training and preparedness?
There's never enough. There's never enough time for all the training we want to do. But we're always looking, and thankfully we have a chief like Chief Simonelli who has been more than willing to send our staff across the state for training. He sent me around the country for training. There's always going to be a need for more. But we strive, especially with a chief like Chief Simonelli, to do the best we can. But we're always looking for help from people like Dave, from Rachel, anybody that can contribute, we're willing to listen to and have them come in and help us if they can contribute.
In about 30 seconds, Deputy McCoy, final thoughts.
Just to speak to training, August 9th, we have some deputies attending some training on autism. August 18th is the next recruit class, disability awareness training, and in the fall of 16, the Sheriff's Office, we are putting together a training program with disability awareness, in particular autism, for all of our deputies that will go through the training this fall.
And Dave Whalen, about 20 seconds, some final thoughts from you.
Just embrace what we have out there. It is free. It is supported by the state of New York and vetted. We can make it happen together. We're all in this together.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests here for, I think, an important conversation now, framed by recent news events, but something that has been ongoing here. Rachel Rosner is the Director of Education and Support Services for Autism Up. As always, Rachel, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Evan, for having me.
And from the RPD, Chief Simonelli, always generous with his time. Chief, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Sergeant Steve Boyle, the head of the Emotionally Disturbed Persons Response Team for RPD. Sergeant, thank you.
Thank you.
Deputy McCoy from the Monroe County Sheriff's Department. Deputy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
And Dave Whalen, again, Director of First Responder Disability Awareness Training at Niagara University. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks for doing this.
Listeners, thanks for taking the time to interact with this important program today. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk with you Friday on Member Supported Public Radio.